Where two or three are gathered, Jesus is right there. This is Father Scott Seetaler. What follows next is a joyful reflection. It's Thursday, and by this point in the week, people are really starting to get on your nerves or driving you crazy. Please remember the words from the musical Les Miserables. To love another person is to see the face of God. If you call yourself a follower of Jesus Christ, those words have to be lived. Lived every day, even when it's very difficult to live them. To love another person is to see the face of God. That is the only reason why we can have hope that our world will survive. That more and more people, like you and me, will become domestic mystics in which we respond to the invitation to Jesus to recognize him in all the people that we come into contact with. Today's scripture passage, Matthew 18, verse 20. For where two or three come together in my name, there I am with them. That won't come as a surprise to you because I almost said the whole thing at the introduction of today's program. Jesus is there where two or three are gathered. Now, to make this point, I have a story with you. I want to share with you. It was written by a man named James Winburn Simpson. From Simpson, Illinois, excuse me. James Winburn. He writes, I don't remember what I gave anyone else that Christmas of 1956, but I remember what I gave my dad, a paperweight. I was 10 at the time, and Miss Autry, our fourth grade teacher, assured us that dads loved paperweights. You started out with a smooth, round stone, painted it, covered with glitter, and glued a little piece of felt to the bottom. Presto! The perfect dad Christmas gift. Well, maybe for most dads, but my dad didn't fall under the most dads category. As far as I could tell, the thing that interested him most was a bottle of gin he picked up each Friday when he got off work at the garage door company. He'd keep company with that bottle and the TV right through till Monday, when he'd sober up and go back to work again. Paint it your dad's favorite color, Miss Autry told us, so I chose a deep shade of green that matched Dad's 1953 Hudson Hornet that sat proudly in our driveway. I'd never really given him a present before. I hoped maybe it would change Dad's attitude and bring a smile. I wrapped the paperweight in a colored tissue paper and gave it to Dad on Christmas Eve, too excited to wait till morning. What's this? Dad said, shifting his eyes from the TV to the tissue cover object in my hands. I made it myself, Dad. With each layer of tissue he pulled off, I got a little more anxious. Finally, the last layer fell away. Dad held the green rock in his hand, hefting it, feeling its weight, rubbing at the glitter with his thumb. He got a funny look on his face. A rock, he said. What am I supposed to do with a rock? Dad put the paperweight on the coffee table next to his drink and went back to his TV. The rock sat right there for months, and every time I saw it, I felt a fresh stab of embarrassment. Finally, one day, inexplicably, it vanished. I didn't know where it went, probably in the trash. The bottom line was, I didn't have to look at it anymore. Sometimes, though, if you caught him at the right place in the bottle, Dad would be downright friendly. He served in the Pacific in World War II and could tell some pretty amazing stories. Some pretty harrowing ones, too. Stories that made me proud to have him for a dad. But those good moments were fleeting. I was 13 when I came home to find Mom and Dad in the middle of an especially ugly fight. I got between them. Dad took a swing, knocking a cup Mom was holding out of her hand. It shattered against the wall. Had Dad been aiming for the cup or me? It didn't much matter. I ran out of the house and started walking. Mom's car caught up with me a mile down the road. Her things, hastily packed, were in the back. Mom and Dad divorced soon after, and I never lived with Dad again. But I still came by to visit him, as much out of some vague sense of duty as anything else. It was clear enough he'd never be a father who'd be proud of me, but some part of me simply refused to stop caring about him. He was my dad. He didn't make it easy, though, especially in my later teens. "Bring my packages in from the car," he ordered me on one of those visits. It was Friday. Those packages I knew included a fifth of gin. "Bring your own packages in," I told him, the rebellion that had been building in me for years, my anger spilling out at last. Dad grabbed my arm. "I told you to bring that stuff in," he shouted. My hand shot up, seemingly of its own volition. I backhanded him. The blow wasn't hard at all, more symbolic than real. Yet I regretted it instantly. Dad backed away, tears in his eyes. Tears I'll never forget. "Why don't you just go," he said, his voice trembling. I turned and left. I was 18 in 1966 when I shipped out with the Marines for Vietnam. I caught a bullet in a firefight and came back in a full leg cast, toe to hip. Once I was able to drive, I went over to see Dad. It took me a long time to get out of the car and make my way up to the door. Dad stood in the doorway and watched me approach. Our eyes met. "Hello, son," he said simply. "I'm glad you're home." When you're young, you think people are just who they are. You never really think about them changing. Vietnam taught me painfully that wasn't so. The war changed me in more ways than I could count, in more ways than I could talk about. But I did talk about it a little, to Dad, of all people. In the weeks and months following my return, we shared stories about war, the things we've seen. Dad's were long and involved, mine were short, tentative. But Dad listened to my every word, even when he was drinking. Drinking, that hadn't changed. In the late 70s, Dad retired and moved back to his hometown in central Mississippi. He indulged his passion of fishing and famously hauled a 9-pound bass around town, showing it off to so many people that it finally spoiled under the sun. Then in his mid-80s, he surprised everyone. He quit drinking just like that. He did something else shocking, too. He started going to church. "Our new minister just doesn't preach like old Brother Bennett did," he said to me one day when I was down there on a visit, sitting back in his chair, a big glass of Coke by his side. "Old Fire and Brimstone Bennett, now that was preaching, and that would really get your blood going." After another visit a few months later, I got up to leave. Dad got a sad look on his face. "Stay a little longer, son," he said. So I did. When I finally got in my car, I took one more look back at the porch and saw Dad standing there, tears rolling down his cheeks. I stopped the car and rushed back. "What's wrong, Dad?" I asked. "It's okay, son," he said. "I just had a feeling." A few weeks later, I learned the reason for Dad's tears. He had cancer. Nothing could be done. We buried him at Flat Rock Church near the back fence under a scrubby old oak that rose obstinately up through a growth of poison ivy. A fitting enough image for his life. Did I wish that Dad had gotten past the poison ivy a little sooner? That he'd been able to love me as a boy in the way that he'd come to when I was a man? You bet. That love would have changed everything. But I was grateful for the love I got all the same. I drove over to Dad's house to clean out his belongings. Toward the end of the job, at the very back of his closet, I pulled out a shoebox. It was strangely heavy in my hand. I opened the lid. Inside was a small object wrapped in tissue. Pulling the tissue away layer by layer, I found an ungainly green rock sprinkled with glitter. Holding that rock, the last of my resentment vanished. God, thank you for Dad's in my reconciliation. People can change. They can grow. I know, because my dad did. So did I. Just like I had hoped all those years ago. I'd hoped a little rock paperweight I'd made in fourth grade would change things between Dad and me. And it had. A rock I had made in fourth grade changed everything. End of story. Isn't that powerful? It's a very touching story. How am I connected with today's topic? Well, you know, where two or three are gathered, here it was two. Here was two that had their moments, their difficult moments. Two that, you know, wondered if their relationship could ever get better. And there's that amazing God, that amazing grace of Jesus Christ, the power of his death and resurrection working in their lives in ways that they don't understand, ways they don't, well, you know, ways that just doesn't at first seem like it's bearing any fruit, but it does bear fruit. You got to train yourself, okay? You have to train yourself to be aware of the presence of God working in your life and working in other people's lives. Sometimes the presence of God works powerfully, and sometimes it's very gentle. Sometimes it happens very quickly, sometimes it takes time, as in the story. But look at the turnaround on the part of that man's father. He went from being very self-centered to drinking himself into oblivion so he didn't have to face the pain of his life, to giving up drinking, going back to church, being reconciled with his son. And underneath all that cold hardness, was a man who treasured the rock his son gave him in the fourth grade. Got to train yourself to recognize the presence of God, because where two or three are gathered, Jesus is there. Who do I want you to pray for today? I want you to pray for music directors, your church music director, okay? Very, very important that you pray for him or her. They set the tone often for the liturgies. It becomes very important that they have God's interest at heart, the community's interest at heart, and just their career. It's not a matter of their showing off their talent so much as bringing people closer to God. So pray for music directors. Today's food for thought. You can read the world's shortest sermon on a traffic sign. Keep right. Get it? Keep right. Do the right thing. Today's small attempt to make you smile or laugh. This is clever. Right after the presidential election, two boys were sitting together. One was crying and the other asked him what was wrong. The boy said, "My father does not love me." "Of course he does," the other boy said, trying to reassure him. "What makes you say such a thing?" Get ready. "Well, he's been back to vote three times since he died, but he's never come to see me once." I hope you got that, because that's pretty clever. Want to contact me? Father Scott, 221 36th Street, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, 15201. You can let me know if you listen to the program, if it's helpful. You can let me know if you like the jokes. I just love to hear from the people. It makes all my efforts worth it. You can also send me your prayer intentions. I will faithfully take them to prayer. And I mean that. You can let me know if you want to receive my newsletter. You can send me a check to keep my hospital open. Make the check to TASH, Inc. Send to Father Scott, 221 36th Street, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, 15201. And as I always do in the program, I encourage you to visit my website at fatherscott.com. Wealth of information, inspiration, and humor. Spell out Father, fatherscott.com. Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there is injury, pardon. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is despair, hope. Where there is darkness, light. And where there is sadness, joy. Joyful, joyful, Lord, we adore.